Welcome to the Popular Pig Podcast, a convenient place where you can stay up to date on what's popular in the swine industry. By listening to Popular Pig, you will receive invaluable information on the latest trends, news, and research from various experts who guide the global pork industry. Popular Pig is brought to you by SwineTech, the award-winning creators of SmartGuard and PigFlow. To learn how PigFlow can help you streamline your workforce and reduce piglet and sow deaths, visit swinetechnologies.com. Popular Pig is also made possible by
the National Pork Board,
Farm Credit Services of America, Johnsonville Foods, Hypor Genetics, Minitube, Orbit Farm Technologies, Brenneman Pork, PIC North America, Swine Robotics, Neogen, Innovative Heating, and PigEquipment.com. Brought to you by American Resources.
Welcome to the Popular Pig Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Rota, and today we're joined by Larry Bertrand. How are you doing today, Larry?
Outstanding. Thank you for asking. Beautiful day here in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Yeah, we're fairly lucky this year. We have not had bad weather at all. That's a real blessing for sure.
Absolutely. We're about in the same boat. Had a little stretch of cold weather, but not a lot of snow, and I can deal with that after living about 4 years in Northwest Iowa back away. So, yeah.
So we're actually going to flip the order of operations in this episode. I'm going to get right into the fun, goofy stuff, and then we'll get into the more serious stuff. Okay. So I'm going to ask you some rapid fire questions. First one's going to be, if I put you in a bar singing karaoke, what is your song?
Oh, I'd say, I don't know. I love country music.
Taylor Swift?
No. Sorry. Not a Taylor Swift. I love that. That's kind of funny, though, because I'm a super big Kansas City fan. But no, Chris Stapleton. I love all of Chris Stapleton's music. White Horse is pretty cool. We went to see him in Nashville. So, yeah, that would probably be the one. I couldn't sing it, but I'd love to hear it.
What is your go-to pork dish?
Oh, shoot. Love to have rice and cut up a pork loin and a little bit of flavoring that Chris puts in it. Really, really good. I'm a big rice and somewhat pasta person, but that would be my go-to dish, I think.
Okay. If you could travel anywhere in the world, where would you go?
Oh, that's another great question. Chris and I would like to do that. We'd like to start traveling some here in the near future. And we definitely want to go out and see the geyser and see Four Boys on a Mountain and probably also the Grand Canyon. We want to go west. Chris really wants to go to a dude ranch and ride some horses. So that'd be kind of interesting also.
So if you could go back to when you were younger and magically choose another industry to work in besides the pork industry, a whole nother career, what is that other industry?
It's a very unique, neat question because I've spent my whole life either on a farm or in the pork industry or doing some of it. I guess right. My answer to that would be, I'd like to mentor. Maybe so much as to say possibly teaching agricultural teaching school like FFA or that type of thing. I really enjoy mentoring and listening and trying to teach others.
Gotcha. Well, for today's conversation, what we're really going to dive into is what you have done with Pork Friendly, but also your story, your journey in the pork industry. You're somebody who is fairly visible in the industry on a regular basis. And I think one of the big things we wanted to do with this podcast was help share each other's stories. So that way, when we see each other, we know a little bit more about all the hard work that has gone into supporting the industry, putting food on the table. And so if you wouldn't mind starting, just share a little bit about your background. How did you get involved in agriculture and more specifically pigs?
Okay. As I've kind of told you, but I now want to tell the group here and the audience that my mother and father, God bless them, they're still alive. And dad's 87, mom's 86. And the family still owns a linear farm that my great-grandfather bought in 1876. We moved. My father was in the fertilizer business, got a chance to come back to the family farm when his brother purchased a grain elevator and went that direction. And so we moved in 1969 to the family farm. I have an older brother. I have a younger sister and a younger brother. But when we moved there, we started the operation with our family farm, 360 acres, and we gradually grew the farm, the cropping side of the farm, to about 1,800 acres, predominantly share crop or bank managed or that type, other than the ground that we own. In 1970, we had converted the old barn from the farm there and put in some wooden little stalls to farrow. And we went over to a neighbor, a gentleman by the name of Gary Cole, who was in business at the time. And I bought a Hampshire sow and my older brother bought a Yorkshire sow. So we started with two animals, and that was in 1970. I was fortunate. I took a pig that year from that Hampshire sow, and I won our Kankakee County Fair. I know it's not a lot of fun when you win the first year and you compete till you're 18 or 19. My fortunate thing was my last year when I was 18, I won the county fair on the barrel show again. So that was kind of a neat story. So we gradually grew Matthew in our enterprise basically about, I would say like around 73, 74, we took a piece of ground that was about 10 acres up on top of a sand hill. And we built a 24-hour crate farrowing house. At the same time, we built a Cargill. I don't know if you remember the old Cargill floors, open concrete floors. And very labor intense, right? And so we started out with having the sows, and at that time, whatever butcher hogs that we brought out of that operation onto both of the two Cargill floors. Sows would be on one, and we'd bucket feed the sows, you know, the old way of doing things. And but they weren't on dirt, they were on concrete. And so that lasted till about, I think it was around the year of 76, 77. At that time, we decided to grow a little larger, and we built a hot and cold nursery with a 660 grow finish barn on the far end of it. And we expanded. At that time, we were probably up to about 220 sows in our operation, farrow to finish. And that would have been in the later 70s. Then, of course, interest rates got pretty high in the late 70s, 79 and 80. And so, you know, with 19% interest, and let me go back just a second. When I was 14 years old on that farm, I bought out half of my father's herd. So I was a half owner of the herd itself. At 14 years, I went to PCA and got a loan, you know, at 14 years old. My brother was just about the same on the grain side with my mom and dad. So now to go back to the late 70s, of course, hogs went down, interest rates went up. You know, we were trying to feed the whole family. At that time, my brother was already married, and I was married at the time. And so it got tight, and so we had family meeting, and we decided that somebody would have to go off the farm and get an off the farm job. So in 1982, I left the actual farm, sold my herd back to my dad, my half herd, and went to work for Oscar Mayer Foods. And they had a packing plant at the time at Moments, Illinois, which now is owned and operated by Johnsonville Sausage. So I worked there from 82 to 86. And that's about the time that IBP at the time purchased the Columbus Junction plant, refabbed it, and were needing some pork procurement buyers. So I was fortunate enough to interview with Greg Harvey and Gary Mahan, and moved my family to Burlington, Iowa, and became a hog buyer for the Columbus Junction plant. And then you know, you always think that it's greener on the other side. So when I was at the Oscar Mayer plant in Moments, I had been fortunate enough to meet Mr. Ted Fritz, who at that time was with Oscar Mayer in his past, but was with Cargill XL Corporation. So I worked about a year with the IBP folks, and then that's about the time XL, at the time, Cargill XL, bought the Ottumwa, Iowa plant. So I didn't have to move my family, and I jumped ship and went to work for Cargill XL. That worked fairly well until, you know, we had a little disagreement basically with the gentleman that Ted had brought in. And so I decided that I'd give Mr. Craig Harvey and Mr. Gary Mahan a call back, and I went back to work for IBP Tyson. So then about in 89, I guess, actually, I had moved up to Storm Lake, a little bigger territory with more hogs up in the north west Iowa part. And in 1989, I think it was the summer 1989, IBP Tyson bought out the whole eastern division of the Heinold operations, which was about 53 hog markets out east. So I was fortunate enough to be picked as the selected as the supervisor, and I moved my family to St. Louis, Missouri, and become a IBP Tyson supervisor. I had 26 hog markets in four different states, covering Kentucky, Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana. Proceeded to do that, and as the business was growing, you know, now we're into the 90s, you know, and this is pre 1997, 98, 99 years, which, as everybody knows, were pretty unfortunate years if you were raising hogs. So did that, continued to do that until I was probably 28, 29 years into that, which would have brought me to about 2015 or so. Decided to let Mr. Mahan and Mr. Gene Lehman know that I was gonna leave. And at that time I left and I started my own consulting business. I worked with Mo Russell and Terry Jones out of Iowa. And I was kind of a consultant. I was fortunate to pick up people like our top 40 pork producer, Mr. Jimmy Tosh, and some other people, and did that for about 3 months. And that's about the time that Triumph Foods was going to go to a second shift. So me and Mr. Hoffman from Triumph Foods, we finally got together, and I became the assistant vice president of procurement for Triumph Foods, working with, of course, Jerry Lindenbauer and Brad Nadler. Did that. We were successful to bring on that second shift right away. We aligned a bunch of animals that, of course, with my network of friends, it worked out really well for everybody. It would have been about, I would say, about 2011 or 12. My mother had a slight heart attack, so I decided I was going to go back and help my father and our family take care of my mom for a little while. So I went back. I left Triumph Foods and left and did that for a little while. At the time, I picked up the phone and I called a great gentleman by the name of Jerry Brooks from JBS and asked him if he needed some help buying hogs. And so that created a position for me to, again, utilize my skills and my knowledge and my network. And I purchased animals for JBS, for Jerry, and all of the plants. At that time, they had five different plants in the industry. Continued to do that for about 4 or 5 years, Matthew, and I always wanted to try genetics. So I thought, you know, that'd be kind of neat. That's something I haven't done. I want to put that kind of in my bucket list and my portfolio that I've accomplished. So I went to work for Mr. Jim Long in Genesis and did that for about 8 or 9 months. And I will tell you that of all my career positions and jobs, that's probably the toughest. That's an extremely hard position to have. Of course, as you know, genetics cost a lot of money to switch, and it takes time and energy to convince somebody to switch, and they don't do it very often. So it was a good experience, and did that for about that amount of time, and about 9 months, 10 months, and then I left there. In the meantime, I met my beautiful wife, Chris, and in 2016, we married. It's her second marriage, my second marriage. She has two children, a daughter and a son. They're both up near Chicago. My first wife and I had one daughter, and she's in St. Louis. She's blessed me with two grandchildren, my little grandson, 5 years old, Connor, and my little granddaughter, Cora, who's about 5 months old now. So anyway, so met Chris, and we were going about our lives. And about in 2019, Chris and I went out to Omaha to see some folks, and we got back in the car. Chris says, you know, Larry, she says, you know, we're not getting any younger. And she says, I think you and us and me, and we could help a lot of families and a lot of producers utilizing your skills and your network. Why don't we just start our own business? So I, as a good husband should, I listened to my wife, and we started Pork Friendly, BMLLC. We're a licensed, bonded company that works with pork families across the United States. We can trade isoenes, feeder pigs, pulse owls, market hogs, and we put A to B and connect them together and transact the transaction with them. We We also do packer negotiations, of course, with my packing background. Hopefully we help some people that way. And I always tell people, Matthew, that I don't have any clients or any customers, but I got a boatload of great friends. And I think that if you keep it in that kind of concept and do what I think my parents had taught me, and that was to be fair, to respect people, to be honest, to be transparent, and try to do what the good Lord asks us to do, and that's to try to help as many people as you can, because someday he's going to come get us all. And so that's what we try to do, Chris and I, and been pretty successful at that. Of course, through our network and through our Pork Friendly BM LLC. Within that company, Chris and I own that company. We're both CEOs. We're both 50% shareholders. We recently started working a little side by side with a company out of Indiana called Emergent Solar Energy. Jeremy Lipinski and his son Zach. They're a solar based company, a family faith company here in Indiana. And so we're just starting to proceed to help them network and try to get some solar out here in the industry and in grain elevators and that type. So about 2021, decided that, you know, we could probably even do more for families if we put our minds to it. So Chris and I got together some really close, knowledgeable pork industry friends, and we started a networking company by the name of Swine Alliance Group, SAG. The goal there in that group was to be equal partners. Nobody actually generates revenue from the other partner. We work together to try to network and grow our businesses and try to help more people than what we can do individually. So when we sit down at your table with your family, we can bring them like a Matt Harkey, who works with Farm Credit out of Illinois. We can bring them a John and Jacob McIntyre out of Pittsfield, Illinois, that manage probably about 40 to 50,000 sows. We can bring them a gentleman by the name of Troy Alexander from Thorn Creek Insurance out of Illinois, and we can insure their pigs. We can insure their buildings. We can insure their crops. We bring them a person by the name of Stan Edge. He and his father, Milton, back in the 90s and 2000s, were pretty large hog producers in Illinois. He currently is a Northwest Mutual person. So we can get into financing and estate planning with the family. We put together, I know you know a lot of these people, Matthew, but Gavin McPherson from StoneX used to be FC Stone. He does all the ingredients and risk protection for the families that we work with. We also, of course, have a close alliance with Heinle Hog Markets and Charlie Lockridge from Atkinson, Illinois, so that we can utilize people that have sows that need a competitive bid on their animals. We brought in Brett Goff and Mr. Paul Kalmbach from Kalmbach Feeds out east, and they can supply guidance opportunity and different options on the feed ingredients. We also teamed up with Randy Johnson from Agritech. He's out of Missouri. His company's out of Northwest Iowa. They can build your buildings. They can put new equipment in your buildings and that type of thing. We recently hooked up and brought in a couple new partners. Mr. Dr. Hyatt Frobos and Brian Strobel from JYGA, Just All, who basically, I think, are the future of how we're going to operate these farms. And so they do a tremendous job and bring a lot to the table. And then the very last one that we just recently added was Mel Jones and Rebecca Jones out of Chicago. And they have a company by the name of Atmosphere Global, LLC. And they can bring to your farm the opportunity to make sure that disinfects are proper, the cleaning is proper. And so I'm sure there's some things that we still need to add to Swine Alliance as partners, but we've been really successful. I think we're a unique company. We're a unique blend of people, and the acceptance has been extremely good. So that's kind of where we're at. That's kind of what we've done. And what I've done and Chris and I have done together, and we really enjoy this industry, and we've been fortunate, really fortunate, that we've met some super, super great people. I always tell people, you know, I can count my mentors on one hand. You know, you got the good Lord in our faith. We've got my mother and father. We've got Mr. Gary Mahan. We've got Mr. Ted Fritz. And the other fifth one would probably be a toss up between Mike Lucas, who gave me my first start at Oscar Mayer Moments, and also Craig Harvey, who started. So that's kind of where I've been.
So when you look at the process of starting the business after a lifetime of being in agriculture and the swine industry, what was that roller coaster like those first couple of years? How hard was that?
That's a great question. On our company, you mean Pork Friendly? After thinking you had it all figured out and you really didn't, right?
Yeah, I mean, where were you when you had decided to do this? What did you have to sacrifice, and what was that roller coaster like?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, it is extremely tough to start and run your own business, Chris and I, because you go from a weekly paycheck, you go from insurance covered, you go from, putting food on your table, you go from getting vacation time, you go from working a 9-to-5 job, totally different than running your own company, folks, really different. It's scary, a little bit scary. You have to be extremely organized. You have to be all in to what you're trying to accomplish, which Chris and I were. But yes, it's a complete shift of your normalcy of working for a company, working for a family, working for anybody other than yourself. When you step out of the box and start your own company, it's a scary feeling because you really don't know how you're going to be accepted running that business. The fortunate part is that we had, like I said, a huge network of friends, and we leaned on that pretty hard. So yeah, great question though.
Do you have any good stories from those first few months when you were starting out?
Because see, we started in 19, so as you know, COVID hit the end or towards the middle or whatever into 2020. So you just get started, you got all the bills coming in, you got your license and your bonds, and you got to pay for all that, and all of a sudden the whole industry shuts down. So nobody wants to sell or trade any ice wings. Nobody wants to do any feeder pigs, cull sows. I mean, butcher hogs. We had families calling us saying, "Hey, we can't go to our normal packer. Can you help us, Larry? We got to go someplace else." So, yeah, it was pretty challenging. It was that's a great story. Of course, there's a lot of good stories because, it tested our industry, it tested our families, it tested our packers, it tested everything about what we do here in the pork industry. And I have to say, sure. COVID was a horrible thing, but I think we learned a lot of things. I think we learned how to adjust, how to work together closer, how to be more friendly to the other part of the operation. So if you're in production, we need to be friendly to the packer. The packer needs to be friendly to the producer. I think it brought us together. During that time, we had about 3 months there, Chris and I, that we didn't really have a whole lot to do. We tried to be as helpful as we could. But so I spent a little time and I put together a little spreadsheet on where our industry was at that time. I mean, who had the sows? Who was the packer? Who was this? Who was that? And, I was fortunate enough to send that to Mr. Chuck Grassley, and he was appreciative that Chris and I were trying to help people and try to do what we could. And I actually got here in my office, I got a nice little letter from Mr. Grassley, personal letter. So you learn,
there could not have been a harder time to have started what you guys were trying to do. Like, nobody wanted more pigs.
Right. Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. It was, the timing wasn't real good, but hey, I don't know, Chris and I felt that, hey, we got through it and look at all we learned. And we're probably a lot better off today here in, 2024, when we started the company in 2019 than what we maybe could have been, Challenges.
Yeah.
Hey, challenges, Matthew, I know you talk to a lot of great people and yourselves included. Challenges are there to be met, right? Some people run from challenges. Some people run at them. We feel that we're the kind of people that run at them, so we're blessed again. Yeah.
If you're not a little scared, you're probably not pushing hard enough.
Exactly. You're exactly right. Yep. Very, very true.
What is it? I think it was Mario Andretti who said, if everything feels under control, you're not going fast enough.
And coming from him, that's probably a great comment, right?
Yeah. When you think about the future of Pork Friendly, how do you see this company growing? How do you see it evolving?
Chris and I have spent recently here a little bit of time thinking about that, because we don't want to be standing, the same all the time. I don't like, if you're standing at the same pace all the time, you're probably going to be moving back. So we're always trying to think a little bit differently. What can we do different? What can we help more people with? How can we be not so much more successful for ourselves and our company, but how can we just touch more lives? You know, that's important to us. So we talked about that and we discussed, you know, cause just basically me and her, I mean, that's who does all the work. I'm the one with the mouth that runs the mouth too often. And she does all the smart stuff, you know, keeps track of the records and saves the money and that type of thing. But yeah, so we would like to probably, we talked about it, maybe take this off in a little different direction, but similar in the way we do it. And maybe look at trying to do something similar on the cattle side, on that side of the business. We've talked to a few individuals that appreciate kind of what we put together here and kind of think that they could maybe help us and help them pull this off on the cattle side. So that may be the future. We don't know just yet. But great question, and we always want to think that way. And we do a pretty good job listening. And sometimes you can figure out where your next step is by just listening to the people you're working with.
Well, starting a new business teaches you how to listen really quick, because if you don't listen, you'll be out of business really quick.
Very true. Very, very true. Yeah, listening is more important than doing what I do maybe too much of. That's tough. You're exactly right.
So when you think about the key challenges facing the industry and families in it, what comes to mind for you?
The challenges, boy, I'll tell you, you know, I mean, there's a lot of challenges, right? I mean, besides COVID, let's move away from the COVID years. I mean, you know, right now, I mean, shoot, we've gone from what, half to 1% interest, maybe 2%. And now these producing families are having to pay, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, a couple, 3 years ago, we probably didn't have near the challenges with PERS and PED and that type of thing. And now we've got ASF, you know, banging at our door, and you got to be careful with that. And, you know, I mean, other challenges, like I say, I mean, you've got, we just have gone through probably, I don't know exactly the total number of months, but my estimation, I tell people we've probably been in about 18 months of war. I call it a war right now. It's been really hard in a lot of families. We've drawn a lot of their net worth down pretty hard. They've had to try to survive. Some have, some haven't. We probably have too many sows. We went from about 6.3 million sows here in the U.S., and I think we're down to just barely under 6 million. We're probably going to have to have a few more people exit the industry to keep this thing on a steady base. We probably, maybe when we do that, maybe we're over capacity a little bit in packing industry side. I don't know. I know there's been some good things on smaller packages, packing side, you know, the little independent people that our government has stepped in and tried to help us there. And I think it has done some. We've got cattle prices. You go to the Walmart where we shop and you look at the steaks are $17, $18. And you look at the pork chops are probably 1/5 of that. And you begin to wonder, you know, I mean, you got to ask yourself. I mean, you watch people. I like to watch people. You go out to a restaurant, they all order beef. You know, you go to the store, people buy their disposable income for their family and buy some beef. You know, why is that? Why is it? Why can't we? We've had the per capita consumption on pork set at 50 to 51 pounds for, geez, I don't know, older maybe than I'm alive. I don't know, a long time.
Decades.
Yeah. Why can't we change that? Why? I mean, what is stopping us? Why can't I mean, we're not, if we're overpriced, I get it. You know, you probably be decreased, but we're not overpriced. I mean, we produce pork, great pork, and we do it economically for the consumer. The consumer always is going to be changing. Always, always. My parents probably prepared food and ate food differently than we do. My daughter and my granddaughter are going to do it different. So why can't we move that needle? My belief is that, you know, we got to, if you do things repetitively over and over, you're probably going to get the same results. Maybe you don't agree. Maybe nobody agrees, but that's what I think. And so I think that we need to listen to our consumers. We need to try to figure out why people eat beef and not pork when they go out. Maybe it has something to do with teaching. Maybe it has something to do with education of our product, but also maybe it has something to do with the taste, the quality, the what they get when they buy that pork chop at a restaurant. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you want to get your tummy full and you want to go home and say, boy, that was a good meal. I think I'll go back, you know. But first thing is, you got to get them to eat the pork chop.
If you're at a restaurant and you sit down and you look at a menu, usually there's not a sandwich. You maybe will find a tenderloin or pulled pork, maybe. But usually it's a hamburger or a chicken sandwich, no pork burger there, no tenderloin sandwich or loin sandwich. But if you're going to get a pork chop, usually they dress it up and it's priced at $28 to $34. And then it's like, well, I guess if I'm going to spend $28 to $34 and I can go buy a pork chop at the store for $2.
Yeah.
Like, right. is the upside there where if I go to the store to buy a steak, it's going to cost $18. It's like the multiple of what you pay in a restaurant for a pork chop versus what you pay for it in the store is so much greater than what you pay for a steak and then what you pay for it when it's at a standard restaurant. I wonder if we're at two massive ends of the spectrum sometimes when we bring pork to the restaurant, but there's a lot I don't know, but it goes through my mind.
Hey, Matthew, that's a great point. I mean, when you analyze it in that perspective, that's a great, great point. You know, I mean, there has to be answers here, folks. I mean, we've all spent a lot of time devoting a lot of time and energy and knowledge, hopefully, to our pork industry and our leaders of our pork industry, but there has to be answers, folks. I mean, we have to get connected and do something different than we've ever done, because if you repeat over and over, you're going to get the same results. And we need better results because, you know, I mean, I don't know what I'm of the belief that the people we export product to, the countries and even the United States, the populations are going to decrease. And our population's decreasing at 50, 51 pounds. Now, all of a sudden, we don't need 6 million sows. We only need 5 million. And so we have to be cognizant of what we need to do in the future. I don't have all the answers. I told some people that I really respect, I said, you know what our industry really does need to do, Matthew? I told them, I said, let's go to a hotel. Let's get the biggest conference room we can get, or even just a suite. It'll cost a little money, but let's whitewash the walls. Okay. Let's bring in a packer or two. Let's bring in a banker. Let's bring in some feed pump. Let's bring in genetics. Let's bring in some industry people. Paint the walls white, lock the doors, and start putting up ideas on the walls. And nobody gets to leave until we've refined that down to, I think what happens is sometimes we get too many things that we want to try to accomplish, 10, 12 things. I was just recently at that Mr. Paul Kalmbach's conference here this week out in Ohio. And he and his son, Paul Kalmbach Jr., they are the belief, and I believe they're pretty smart people, but there's lots of those type of people out there. We need to refine this down to about 3 or 4 really key things and really put lots of people, lots of effort towards it, rather than go out here and say, okay, we're going to do these 12 or 15, 20 things. Let's go accomplish 3 really important things first, and then when we get that done, we'll pick 3 more.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just my thought.
We were talking about domestic demand at an event, and every other event, the topic of a fast food restaurant like Chick-fil-A, but for pork comes up. And then we were whiteboarding ideas, and there's 4 of us talking, and no, none of us could come into an agreement. We're all excited, we're all passionate, no agreement. And then we whittled it down to this idea of, like, you have these Subways or Blaze Pizza, or you start with a base and you add on like a Chipotle, a Poncheros at the burrito bar. Like, yeah. You maybe have a place where you go and your base is pulled pork. And then you add on things along the way and like build your own sandwich kind of model for pork burgers. Like, you walk in, pick a bread, pick a meat, pick a sauce, pick 2 toppings. Pick a side and you're done. And you could like keep it simple, keep it fast, and get unlimited combinations and options, because people could pick and choose whatever they wanted to throw on it with the guarantee that the pork is at least going to be cooked right.
Yeah.
I could have some fun with that. I don't see myself being in fast food though, but if you had, this is my question I want to lean into.
Yep,
if you had $10 million and you had to spend every penny, on something that would spark domestic demand, and it all has to go into one bucket.
Ooh,
what's your
tough question?
Yeah. What comes to mind? What are you spending it on? Endorsements, a restaurant, international? What? It could be anything. I don't think there's a wrong answer.
No. There probably isn't a wrong answer. $10 million, you got to spend it all on one thing. Okay.
And, or there's probably a wrong answer, but there's probably not a bad answer. I better put it that way.
I guess, you know, my attempt at a answer, forget whether it's wrong or right, a answer would be, I think that if I had the $10 million, I would want to put together a team of people or whatever, and I would want to put all our focus in trying to first find out from our current consumer what we're missing. Okay, spend the money, get out in the country, in the bigger cities first, probably. I mean, we want to service everybody, but get out in these bigger cities. And I know that the pork producers are doing some of that, but really put some effort into finding out why we can't break into some of these markets, why we can't have that more than that 50, 51 pound. Once we do that, once we try to figure that out, then I'd really spend the rest of the money, a lot of time and energy, and get together a lot of people. And I'd try to get some endorsements of certain people, people that everybody kind of knows, and get them out.
Yeah, yeah. So do some. Who? Yeah. It's all in one bucket. You're giving $10 million to somebody.
Jeez. Oh, man. Is Ronald Reagan still alive, or do him?
It may be. I mean, who knows what she could do with $10 million?
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Who? It's got to be, I don't know. You know, it's got to be somebody that everybody relates to. Who is that? Shoot, I don't know. You know, probably let's go with a chef. You know, let's go with a, what's his name? The guy that.
Guy?
Who?
Guy Giari or whatever.
Or Kim, or the other guy that has them in the kitchen and throws them all out, cusses at them and whatever.
Oh, Hell's Kitchen. There you go. You could have a pork-themed season, Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah. Something like that. You know, I think that, again, great question. I'd like to know how everybody would answer that I know all my friends. But the key thing there is that, okay, you got the $10 million. You got to spend it all in one bucket. Do something that we haven't done before. I mean,
I'm with you. Go all in. I mean, yeah. We've got a lot of chefs and people we work with as an industry, which helps tell a story. But we do not have any A-listers. I like to point to the new Nike movie that came out with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. Nike was bottom or fourth or fifth in the shoes world of basketball. Yeah. And they always spread their money out across multiple athletes with endorsements. And then finally they said, you know what? We need to double, triple, quadruple our amount. And we need to put it all in this guy out of North Carolina named Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
They put it all in one basket and nobody thought it was a good idea.
Yep. No, super good point. Super
made him number one really quick.
Oh, immediately. Immediately, you know, and you're right. I mean, who would have thought, you know, this guy out of North Carolina, you know, I mean, he's a basketball player. Okay, there are a lot of basketball players. Well, just so happens they did their research and their homework, and they knew as this guy went through his career, I mean, who doesn't know that name? Okay, who doesn't know that name today? I mean, dude, my daughter is like 39. She knows that guy's name. I mean, there's probably kids that are, I don't know, maybe 10 years old that are going to the store with their mom and say, I want those, one of those Nikes or Jordans, you know?
And it wasn't obvious. He was the third pick in that draft. He was not the first overall. So this was not like a no-brainer decision.
Yep. No, excellent point.
It's going to take faith. We're going to have to trust somebody to make a big decision and live with the consequences. And it's like, who is going to make that tough decision?
Yeah. Excellent points. Yep. Totally agree with you. But so, we got to move off center. We got to get doing it, I think. I mean, we're wasting time. We're wasting, I mean, every month, every year we go by and we sit there at the 50, 51 pounds. We're wasting not only time and energy, but we're we're decreasing the opportunity for our young people in this industry to be successful. Because, you know, I mean, you look at it. I mean, you got a college grad, you got a non-college grad, a two-year degree person, you got a person that grew up on a farm, and he looks at our industry and says, "Wow, tell me, Dad, or tell me, Matthew, or tell me, Larry Bertrand, how has this treated the families that are in it the last 18 months? What are the positives that you can talk about?" You know,
yeah,
that's a challenge. That's a real challenge.
Yeah, and it's not due to a lack of effort by the individuals that are trying to solve this problem. There's a ton of people volunteering and that have had careers that they've invested in. But it's just fun to think different. And I think we're going to have to think really different and get aggressive and be bold and not be afraid of failure. And fear of failure and moments where you're trying to accomplish a problem like this can it can cement you. It can hurt you. It can ruin you. It can make things hard. So, thanks for going down that path with me. I do have a question for you before we wrap up, and that is, what is a golden nugget you'd be willing to share with listeners? Life lesson. Bit of advice.
My advice would be that your life is going to be about choices. Everybody's life is about choices. You're not going to be fortunate enough to always make the right choices. You're going to make some bad choices. You're going to make some wrong choices. Learn from those choices. But more importantly than anything, lean into the people that you feel are the right type of people, the people that you want to associate with. Lean into those people really hard. And at the end of the day, do something that is fun, something you want to have fun with. And you can enjoy. Don't do something that is a drag on your life, a drag on your family, a drag on your time. The key there is life is the choices. Make good choices and live with the choices that you choose. That's important.
Well, I appreciate you being a guest on the Popular Pig Podcast. And we wish you the absolute best as you continue to grow your business and serve the swine industry.
Well, Matthew, I want to thank you and respected you, and I know a lot of people do. And keep doing what you're talking about there. Keep passing the word, because you're right. It's going to take hard work, and people respect you, and I do, and Chris do. And so thank you for letting us have the time to talk to you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Popular Pig. We aspire to learn and grow together through the experience and wisdom shared by our esteemed guests. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues within the swine industry. For more information, please go to popularpig.com to receive updates when new episodes are available. Popular Pig is brought to you by SwineTech, the award-winning creators of SmartGuard and PigFlow. To learn how PigFlow can help you streamline your workforce and reduce piglet and sow deaths, visit swinetechnologies.com.